as this is the first panel of the day, we've been running around a little bit this morning getting things finalized, so some of us are a little out of breath. Okay, I'm a little out of breath. Will everyone who cares to please take a moment of silence and join me in the Serenity Prayer. God, grant me serenity to accept the things I cannot change, courage to change the things I can, and wisdom to know the difference. The title of this long-timer panel is, It Really Is One Day at a Time. All of the panel topics this weekend are taken from For Today, the Daily Reader first published by Overeaters Anonymous in 1982. How many of you have one of those little white books? How many of you love the little white book? Okay, so do I. This panel's topic comes from the May 14th reading. You should have a handout on your seat, pretty in pink, of the May 14th reading, which I'm going to read now so the people in the tape recording can hear it. The quote comes from Thomas Fuller. He that is too secure is not safe. Whether I have been abstinent 12 hours or 12 years, I never have it made. Today's recovery is all I have. A compulsive overeater who has had any kind of dieting career knows all too well how suddenly all the wonderful plans can come crashing down. The one day at a time philosophy of Overeaters Anonymous is insurance against complacency. It guards against my projecting anything beyond this 24 hours. I know I am abstinent today, but cannot tell what I will do tomorrow. That is the attitude that keeps me gratefully abstinent. For today, I am sure only of this day's abstinence. I have no need to plan tomorrow's abstinence or weight loss. We have four speakers on this panel this morning who have been abstinent and in recovery for over 100 years. And that's a lot, huh? That's right. Great. As they are sharing, we will pass an Ask-It basket around the room, and you'll see there's a basket and a tin. If we can keep the basket on the left side of the room, my left, your right, and keep the tin on the right side of the room, that way everybody should get a chance to get it. Also, please be sure to keep it moving, even if you've already had it in your hand, because as speakers continue to share, members may think of questions that they didn't have when the basket first passed by. So just keep it going and keep it going and keep it going, and at some point I'll come and take it away from you and it won't go anymore. So our first speaker this morning will be Cheryl, who will speak for 10 minutes.
Hi, everybody. My name is Cheryl, and I'm a compulsive overeater. And I came to Overeaters Anonymous in March of 1976. My abstinent birthday is June 6th of 1976. I have 33 years and change of abstinence. And when I came to OA, I had tried everything that there was to try that was available to me. And I read about Overeaters Anonymous in, and you, some of you may have already heard me share this. I read about Overeaters Anonymous in the newspaper, I think it was in Dear Abby, and the woman had written in there that she had tried everything there was to try and nothing worked for her, but she found a program called Overeaters Anonymous, and it worked when nothing else could. And I was attracted to that, so I immediately ran to my phone book, looked up Overeaters Anonymous in my phone book, called the number, and the line was busy. And I was grateful because I really wasn't ready to do anything. I was scared. I really didn't think that there was any hope for me. I lived in a world of nothingness. I don't know if any of you can relate to that. I just existed. I did not live. And food was the only thing that I had that just kept me going. And finally, it was one day in March that my Avon lady came by, and I told her that I had read this thing about Overeaters Anonymous, and she said, you know what? She said, you really should go, because she said, I don't understand why your husband stays with you the way that you look. And I thanked her for sharing, for being honest with me, and she told me something that I had told myself a million times. I didn't know why I stayed with myself, you know, let alone anybody else. So that same Avon lady came to my house. It was before March that she came and told me that, but she came to my house one day in March and she said, I have found Overeaters Anonymous. It's absolutely amazing, Cheryl. And you need, she said, I have a few pounds to lose, and so I'm going to go back, and I'd like you to go with me. So I asked my husband's permission, and like any good little housewife would do. And he said, yeah, go. And his attitude was like, go. He had seen me try and fail many, many, many times. And I went to my first meeting. The first speaker I heard said that they'd lost 150 pounds, and some days were still shitty. And I thought, why bother? If I'm going to go and lose weight and nothing's going to change, why bother? But I heard something here, and I'm sure that that's why you're all coming back, is that you heard what I heard. I heard hope for the hopeless. And so I came back. So it was the first thing that I had ever done for just me. I came back to the meetings of Overeaters Anonymous, and I argued. I just said, you know, you don't understand. I'm different. This, you know, this won't work for me. And so somebody in these rooms told me, you know, that if nothing else worked for me, then I should just try this thing called abstinence. Because just try it, just to find out. And so that was on a Monday night meeting, and I went to two meetings a week. It was all that I could take away from my family. Two meetings a week, Monday and Friday. Somebody told me there's a meeting on Friday, so I went Friday. And I saw this person on Monday, and the following Friday I saw him, and he ran up to me and he said, how did you do? And I said, I didn't, because I knew I couldn't. I knew that by myself and of myself, it was impossible for me to do what I needed to do. And he said, then why don't you just trust God and do what we do? And so I went home, and I went home that night, and I got up on my knees on the following Monday morning, and I said, you know, the first thing I did when I came to OA is I got that, there was a little pamphlet that was just for today pamphlet, and it would say things like, just for today I will be good to myself, just for today I will do something and not be found out. And I taped that inside of my cover where no one else could see it. I didn't tell anyone else I was going to Overeaters Anonymous. I didn't want anybody to know, because I had tried so many things, and I was so excited when I would try something different, and nothing worked for me. So I got down on my knees and I said, you know, God, if you're there, like these people tell me you're there, then you've got to help me. I thought, well, all right, I'll get to the point, because I'm saying what it was like. Anyway, if you're there, then you've got to help me do this thing, because I can't do it myself. And I got up off of my knees, and I cannot tell you what happened, but something happened to me. And I got up off of my knees. And I've been abstaining from compulsive overeating since that day. I had one break, and that was with alcohol. And I felt so guilty, I called that a break. And, you know, now I'm sober, 28 years in Alcoholics Anonymous, and that's all I'll share about that. But this place was, for me, was like a new beginning. I got up off my knees. I got abstinent. I got a sponsor. I didn't work the steps right away because, you know, I'd read the big book and they were just words to me. But after I was in OA for a while and abstaining, I hit what I call an emotional bottom, where I hit a brick wall, and abstinence just wasn't enough. And I remember I thought about committing suicide. I called my sponsor and I said, I don't understand. All those years I was eating and I never thought of suicide. And she said, that's because your buffer is gone. You know, you're abstinent, and now it's either time to grow or go. And I think you've come too far to go, so it's time to grow. And so that's when I started working the 12 steps. I've been in Overeaters Anonymous, like I said, abstaining for 33 years. A lot of things have happened to me. I got divorced in this program. I was single for 13 years. When I got divorced in this program, I thought that God, I was step six, and I thought God was removing my character defect, which was my husband. But actually, he was just opening the door for me to look, take a really good look at myself. So everything that has happened to me in my life since I was, and probably most likely before I came to Overeaters Anonymous, my higher power has had a hand in. He has guided me and directed me. Okay. And, you know, I lost a daughter in this program, abstaining, you know, and I abstained through that. I had the attitude, and I learned from the meetings that I went to, that nothing tastes as good as abstinence feels, and that abstinence keeps the communication between me and my higher power open. If I abstain, it's abstinent or overeating is like, it smothers you. You know, it just is, it just smothers you. And I am so grateful to be abstinent. I'm so grateful for the program. And today is the most important day for me to do what I need to do. And abstinence opens the door for me to do what I need to do. And there's a saying in AA that you can't stay sober on yesterday's sobriety. So I can't stay abstinent or in recovery on yesterday's abstinence. Today is the only day that I have, and I am really grateful for that. And I need it more today. I need the big book. I need the steps. I need everything that I've learned in this program more today than I ever did when I first walked into this program. My whole life depends on it, because I would not have a life if I did not have this program and the abstinence that I have in this program. And I am so grateful to be here. I was so excited about the program last night, and just, we're just very blessed and very lucky to have found this program and to have stayed. And I'm very blessed and very lucky. And do I still have time? Oh, I don't want to go over. Let me think right now. I'm remarried in this program and stayed abstinent through that, you know. And I wanted to marry somebody who had program, because I thought that way we could walk the road to happy destiny. And I'm lucky enough that I met someone who is not in any program. But it works for me. And he absolutely supports me. And he's pretty normal in his thinking. And why, you know, it's like, yeah, it can't be real normal because he picked me. But I still have 1 minute, because I am comfortably crazy, comfortable in my craziness, you know. I walk, my thinking still today has to be guarded by the 12 steps and this program, because of myself and by myself, you know, I'm ballistic. So I'm really grateful for this program. My children will attest to that, and they're very lucky that I have this program. Because as adults, when they were doing their little thing, if I hadn't had this program, I probably would have annihilated them. So I'm grateful for the program. I think I shared, I'm not sure, that my daughter, who was deceased, left two little boys behind. They were 7 and 3, and we gained custody of them when they were 11 and 7. And they're now 21 and 18 and raised, and they're awesome dudes. They're really great kids. So that was my opportunity, I think, that God opened the door for me, and that was my opportunity to make an additional amends to my daughter. And I'm grateful, because if I hadn't had this program, and the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, I wouldn't have been in shape to take care of those boys. And I'm grateful. I'm really grateful for this program. Thank you for letting me share.
Thank you, Cheryl. Just a reminder to have the Ask It baskets going around. I know there's some confusion. Those of you who came in late, we asked us to keep it going around and around and around and around, because additional speakers will inspire you to different questions. So Our next speaker is Janine.
Hi, I'm Janine, compulsive overeater. I'm just so grateful to be here. I've been in this program over half my life, and this January 21st will be 36 years since I walked through these doors. I came into OA in St. Louis 1 year after they had started the program. I was invited to that first meeting, but I didn't think I could afford another program to the one that I was in. The Al-Anon program that I was in was doing so much for me, and I didn't think I could afford another program. Today, my recovery is 3 meetings a week. I go to 3 meetings a week. In my best years of recovery, I was attending 3 meetings a week, and last year I re-upped it from 2 back to 3, and that felt real good for me. I just want to go back a little bit. Los Angeles has been, and California has been, such an influence on my recovery, and I'll share a little bit about that. I have many dear friends out here, and I love coming back. I also have a son who lives out here now who I come to visit, so I was able to coordinate this visit with this 50-year happy birthday celebration that you're having, and I'm just so thrilled to be here. But anyway, when I went to my first meeting back in January 1974, I had been around program in another program long enough to know the importance of getting a sponsor. So I picked somebody out that first week at that first meeting and asked her if I could call her. In those days, they recommended 21 days. You called for 21 days. So I called this girl for 21 days. She actually never returned to a meeting, but she was so influential in my recovery because of taking my calls. But that was where St. Louis was back then. We didn't have much experience, strength, and hope to offer each other. And so I utilized both this willing person who wasn't too overly committed to OA and also my sponsors from the other program to get through that first year. I did lose 85 pounds that first year, and thank you. I did during the 90s, I just want to kind of sum this up, during the 90s I had a relapse period of approximately 10 years. Each year I'd be up around 10 pounds. It was that creeping weight gain. It wasn't going out binging. It wasn't leaving OA. I think the thing I'm proudest of for those 10 years of difficulty is that I knew I needed to keep coming back, and it was darn hard to keep coming back, to look into the eyes of friends who basically were, you know, feeling you left them down, you let them down, you know, where is my inspiration? And it's really hard to come back during those years, but I had great sponsors, and my one sponsor told me to look in the eyes of the people who love you. There's plenty of them around, and if you're focusing on the ones who you think are disappointed in you, you're focusing on the wrong people. And that really helped me to keep coming back. So I kept coming back no matter what. And our little page today says whether I've been abstinent 12 hours or 12 years. Well, my current abstinence is 8 years, and I felt, thank you. And it was about 15 years before that. So, you know, I don't discount that. That still is 23 years of healthy eating and recovery in this program. And a lot of the things I have in my life today. My husband and I celebrated 50 years of marriage. And during this year, our last year, 2009, and there were many, many years in program I didn't know if we were going to make it. I feel pretty confident today that we are. But there were many years I didn't know. I just made the best decision I could about the difficulties we were having one day at a time. I made the decisions about my abstinence one day at a time. The thing that I was fully committed to OA happened about 8 months after coming into this program. One morning I woke up, and I wanted to eat healthy. I mean, it was such an amazing experience. In all of my life of up and down the scale, never before had I wanted to eat healthy. Always diets were connected to what I was going to go out and have at the end of it, some food treat. And I recognized immediately that OA had done something for me in the weight loss that had never happened in my life before. And I was freed from the obsession. And most of my days are free from the obsession of food and overeating. And that is such a blessing. So anybody who's struggling with the white knuckle times, the best thing I can say is just hang in there, because it does pass. Those white knuckle times will pass, and there's nothing like sticking with it through then to where you get to the freedom, and then the eating is so much easier. My current weight loss is only about 35 pounds. Thank you. I still am hoping, even at my age, to lose that other 50 pounds. And for 2010, I've been praying for a restoration to some energy, you know, to where I could add exercise into my program. And for the last couple months, despite a lot of difficult things happening in our lives, I've felt that restoration of energy. So I'm hoping that 2010 will bring that. But I just want to tell you a little bit about what this area has meant to me. In 1975, when our area was very, very new, they decided to send somebody out here to conference because Illinois was doing it, and we're a bi-state area. At that time, we barely had an intergroup. We did things more on a group level. And so I was working very hard to send someone, the type of person I knew could come, somebody without children, you know, who wasn't working and could spend that week out here. Well, it turns out that they convinced me. They solved all of my problems. One of the members offered to babysit for my children. They raised the money, and they decided they wanted me to come out to this conference. Well, it was such an amazing benefit to my program to be out here amidst all of the recovery, the hope, the experience, and even the difficulties of a group conscience of that magnitude. I mean, I do remember standing up at that conference and speaking for certain things and being so scared. And some member came up to me and said, you know, you're such a feminine person, and you also have great courage. And that was so special to me. There's a page yesterday in our One Day at a Time book that said, the art of living is probably the highest form of personal expression. People who have developed the art of living are sweetly loving and deeply sensitive while maintaining their independence. They are respectful of their own values and opinions as they are of others. And for me, along with the freedom from the obsession with food, OA teaching me the art of living has been so important. And bearing through those conferences, and I served on conference literature committee when it was first formed back in 1975, and from that in 78 ended up after having my baby, who now lives out here in California. I stood up for what they call the Conference Literature Committee procedures for the seal of approval, and it was very, very scary, and it took a lot of courage to do that. But I love this program so much, and I love literature and literature committee so much that I found the courage to do that. And from that, eventually ran for a position for Region 9 trustee for the World Service, and was able to serve in that position for 6 years. It was such a blessed time. And there, too, I didn't realize how much the controversy and how much the issues that were involved in even forming sort of a worldwide region were so important to face. And this, it added so much to my life, because these issues that I was afraid to face here, I also was afraid to face in my life. You know, when there was controversy in our marriage, when the children were now teenagers and they were behaving much like my husband behaved, you know, and I didn't know how to handle this kind of situation. But because of you and because of the opportunities and service, I really grew into a different person. So when I had these troubles in the 90s with my abstinence, it didn't occur to me to leave, but I thought I was going to leave my marriage. So I went back to college. I got a bachelor's degree in management. I got a master's degree in communication. Largely, a lot of those credits were from service and things I had done in this program. I did a program that you could kind of document your experience for that. So I got the degree. I went on back. I wanted to become more economically secure if I was going to leave this long-term marriage, and really worked it out. You know, I didn't leave, and I'm glad that I didn't. It was a good decision for us. My husband and I are doing fine today. You know, we're still, both of us, difficult to live with, but we've adjusted somehow. So I am so grateful. I just want to mention that the thing that stuck me in that relapse was a deep resentment against him. And with all my years in program, I forgot the little thing in the big book that says resentment is the number one offender. It destroys more compulsive overeaters than anything else. So when I worked with a writing group for a period of a few years, I was able finally to forgive and let go of that resentment. And, of course, with that, my recovery and my commitment to 3 meals a day, nothing in between, no exceptions, was able to resurface. I also have given up totally ice cream, which for me was my number one binge food. And I'm just very grateful to have that stability for the last 8 years. But like I said, I don't discount my first 15. So I'd like to claim about 23 years of abstinence, even though they haven't been back-to-back. Thank you very much for letting me be with you.
Karen passed me a note that says, you are after Janine. Please go up after she is done. And one thing this program always tells me is that I should be following directions, so that's what I'm doing. My name is Randy, and I am a compulsive overeater. I waddled into my first Overeaters Anonymous meeting on March 4th of 1976. I don't know what my top weight was because I stopped weighing at 200 pounds. And as you can see, I'm a short person. And that started a 10-month nonstop eating binge. So I kind of claim my top weight as 200, but because I like nice round numbers, but in actuality, it was probably a lot higher than that. When I walked into my first OA meeting, it was in a church in Cleveland Heights, Ohio, and there were about 200 people in that room. I was scared to death. You know, fear had ruled my life so much that I could not have a one-on-one conversation with anybody without lying or just totally shrinking away. And when I walked into that first OA meeting, I was completely freaked out. But there were things that I heard at that meeting that have stuck with me to this day. The first thing that I heard was that I had a disease. And all of a sudden, it was like it all made sense to me. Because I like to think that I was a competent person, I was a good person. But God damn it, I would wake up every morning vowing to diet, and by 10:30 in the morning, I was off and running. I couldn't do it. So the fact that I had a disease, it kind of took all the shame and the guilt off of it. The second thing that I heard was that there was a solution, and the solution was this thing called abstinence. And on the platform at this church, they had a whole bunch of big posters. And one of the posters is that abstinence is the most important thing in your life without exception. I believe it now. I believed it then. I believe it now. That there is nothing in this world that happens that is more important than maintaining my abstinence and my conscious contact with the higher power as I don't understand them. The third thing that I heard was that I wasn't alone. I just felt so alone in my life. I felt that nobody ate like I did. I thought nobody felt like I did. But you know what? Over the years, the fellowship of this program have, I identified as a compulsive overeater immediately. And everything, every single meeting that I go to, even if it's a bad meeting, I'll pick up something. The last thing that I heard is kind of the topic of this entire panel. And there was a woman who stood up, like Janine. OA had not been around for very long in Cleveland when I first started. And there was a woman who stood up and pitched, and she had 4 years of abstinence. And I said, oh, my God, how did she do it? And what she said to me has stuck with me to this day. She said, if I thought that I had to do this for the rest of my life, I would go nuts. But I can do it for a day. And so that very first meeting, I learned that it was a one-day-at-a-time program. I decided, okay, I'm going to get abstinent because it was sure as hell a lot better than anything that I had had. So I got abstinent, and my abstinence dates from March 4th of 1976, which means I have 33 years and 10 months, I guess. As you can imagine, there's been a lot of life in between for me, a lot of ups and downs, good times and bad times. And what has gotten me through it is the fact that I can break it down into manageable chunks. What's really interesting is that this one day at a time concept actually led me to my current career. I recently went back and I got a graduate certificate in project management from UCLA. And the only reason that I bring that up is because when you're managing large-scale projects, what do? You break it down into manageable tasks, and if the task still seems overwhelming, you break it down some more into manageable tasks. And that's what I had to do with my abstinence and with my program, is to break it down, maybe not into one day at a time. Sometimes it's one meal at a time, one moment at a time. When I find that I get into the either what has happened or what's going to happen, I'm completely Looney Tunes within a very short period of time. And I usually need to get my sponsor, one of my program friends, to slap me upside the head. And it's not just one day at a time. It's almost, my program has been one blank at a time. To give you a specific example, in 2003, I was in the job that I thought was going to be the be-all and end-all. I had been working for a company that I wanted to work for forever, and I got laid off. And I thought it was the end of my world. And I said, okay, send out one resume at a time. One resume at a time, I sent out 532 resumes. And what's really interesting is that I could not have done that if it weren't for this program. I did, after, you know, in the 532nd resume, I ended up getting a job. I took this job because it was the only job that I could get at the time, given the economy. And I very quickly realized it was wrong. What happened was, this is like a total God shot. I decided to write a resume for the job that I wanted, not the job that I thought everybody else had. The day I finished that resume, a very dear friend of mine called me up, and even though he's not in program, he is insanely spiritual. The conversation went like this. Hey, Randy, just wanted to let you know I've changed jobs. I'm now working for XYZ Corporation, doing that dream job that you and I have talked about for the last 15 years. They have an opening in Los Angeles, and God told me you'd be interested. And I'm going, you'll get my resume in 5 minutes. He said, don't you want to hear the job description? And I said, fine, send it to me. I looked at the job description. I looked at the resume. I did not have to change a blessed word. So that's how it worked in my life. I'd like to spend the last couple of minutes talking about one of the things that they say here is complacency. That is, to me, complacency is as much of a killer as anything. I have seen more people come and go in this program in the last 33 and a half years because they thought they knew it all. And I've gone to more than one funeral of someone who thought that they had it all made. I wake up every morning. I may be weird, but I think this is what has helped me, is that I wake up every single morning and I remember my last binge. I remember the emotional devastation. I remember the lack of control. I remember the depression. I remember all of it. And when I don't, I consciously will myself to do it. And that's a large part of what keeps me abstinent, because I know what, I remember what it feels like. And then I thank my higher power for, I thank my higher power for the fact that I am abstinent today. And then I have my daily reading and meditation books for this program and a couple of other programs that I belong to. And just doing the best that I can for this day, one day at a time. And I'm really grateful to be here. Thank you for letting me share.
Hi, I'm Ken. I'm an abstaining compulsive overeater.
Hi, Ken.
Hi, I've actually called myself an overachiever with a fork. That's what I did very well all my life. I found program from another person in February of 1978. He told me about it. I had to think about what this might be, so my first meeting was in May of 1978, 3 months later. I got a sponsor. I wanted to prove this was not for me. This couldn't work. All I want to do is lose weight. Don't mess with my head. I drove him crazy until November of 1978. I started an abstinence on November 27, 1978, and it's lasted 31 years and about 6 weeks. And thank you, God. I'm maintaining somewhere over 120-pound weight loss. I came in over 300. My weight's now about 180, 185. And that takes care of the numbers. The numbers are really not that important any longer. I came here to fix my body. I fixed my head. This is where the disease lives, between my ears. You don't have to agree with me, but I'm only giving you how this worked for me and what I found when I came here. I called my sponsor once a day with three meals, nothing in between, and I had questions for him, and he always had an answer. I asked him once, you know, I understand about the abstinence, but I'm with normal people at 3 o'clock and they're celebrating someone's party. What am I supposed to do? He said, Ken, keep your hands away from your face. That's a great way to abstain, you know. I never fell into it. I lifted it to my face. Someone asked me once, what do you mean you're a compulsive overeater? And I said, well, I try to do something to make me feel good, but I feel bad, but I can't stop doing it. And they didn't understand. So So I gave him another definition. I said, I'm an addict when it comes to food. And I believe an addict is somebody who reaches for something physical in order to solve something spiritual or emotional. And they look at me and they don't know how to answer me. I'm talking to normal people. All those people outside the hotel, they're terminally normal. They can't help it. My wife and I have had many years of a good marriage that got better because I came here. I learned how to live here. My wife is a normal person. She still does very amazing things. She eats half the food on her plate and says she's full. I don't get it. I really don't get it. My wife puts the plate in front of me. I look down. I see it. And the first thought when I see my dinner is, that's it. That's the way I'm put together inside. That's not my fault. That's my condition. I learned how to live here. I got the best education I ever got here. I didn't get it just in books, in elementary school or high school or college. I got it here, how to stay out of my head. And I do that by having people like yourselves in my life, because I can't do life alone. I learned that when I came in here as well. We talk to each other. We meet with each other. And there's spiritual things that are going to happen. And I said, what's that? And he said, wait, you'll find out. There are spiritual things, many different kinds. A simple one is I drive down Ventura Boulevard in the valley and I don't recognize fast food places anymore. That's all I used to look for, and they don't mean anything. I don't eat meat, red meat. I gave it up. I don't eat bread and I don't eat refined sugar. That's got to be spiritual, because I'd never make that choice myself. And I don't understand it. But it works. And so that book that's got like 500 pages in it, I was told to read it, and I said to my sponsor, it really puts me to sleep. You know, I start on the first page, it talks about 100 demoralized people, and I get tired and sleepy. He said, well, read that page when you have insomnia. I'll give you something else to read. And he gave me a page inside the book, and I said, what's on it? This is my controlling nature. And he said, you read it and tell me what's on it. He knew who he was talking to. It's who I am inside that I came here to change. And I come here today for the sanity, not the weight loss. The weight loss obsessed my mind. And I used to diet for a week at a time, a day at a time. But the only thing that really counts is the moment, getting through the moment. And I can get through moments with other people I can't get through alone. So I come here. I go to meetings. I have a regular meeting. It's on a Saturday morning. I'm here in lieu of that meeting today. I can't believe I'm going to tell you I've been going to that meeting for 28 years. We've been in 11 different locations, but there are other people at that meeting that I met at that first meeting. They're still there. It's amazing. And I don't get paid to do any of this stuff, and that's amazing. We share with each other because we cannot really deal full-time with those terminally normal people that live out there. That was my problem. I only had three problems in my life. That's all. People, places, and things. Everything else worked fine. So when I was asked by, I have relatives that come out from the East that knew me when, I don't really even call them relatives. I call them aliens. And they come out and they say, Ken, what did you do? What happened to you? And I said, well, I have a program. I'm not going to go into it with a normal person and a relative who really doesn't really want to know. All they want to know is, what was the quick fix I had? And I said, I have a program. I'm active in it. And I shut up. And if I have another question, I'll try to answer the next question. What's the program? I get together with other people that have a problem with food. Oh, you don't have a problem with food. You're a good eater. I said, I know. But you see, you understand this talk, and the people outside don't understand it. That makes this a spiritual happening as well, because where else can a bunch of people get together who haven't known each other that well, and still we understand each other's language? It's amazing. It's a way of life I never had, I couldn't buy, and I didn't learn till I came here. in 1978. So now it's a whole bunch of years later, and I didn't graduate. I say, thank God. My wife says, which meeting are you going to this week? Because I pop up at different meetings when I need them. If my head says I have to go and think something out, but my wife knows on Saturday morning I'm in that meeting at 10 o'clock in Reseda, California. And that's good for me. I have friends that call me. They call me a sponsor. And you know why they call me? It makes me feel good. They're taking care of themselves. There are 12 people in my life. We've been together quite some time. They have over 550 pounds of weight off their bodies. But more important, their heads are better than they used to be. And they say that. There's a friend I've sponsored for, gosh, over 25 years. He lives in Florida. I get a written 10th step from him every day. That's got to be not only spiritual but mysterious. But it works for him. It works for me. And what I do with this program is working. There's no other way to do it. I read the big book when I need it. There are pages that deal with anger. They deal with lust. They deal with fear. That's how I live my life, regretting my past and fearing the future. And today I only have to worry about 10 o'clock this morning and getting through the moment. I've had up and down issues with health, and a doctor told me once, it's a good thing you kept your weight off. I told him I was a 300-pounder. I had suffered a cardiac arrest. And he said, it's a good thing you kept your weight off because you wouldn't be here. CPR doesn't work on 300-pound people. So what am I supposed to do? Say, thank you, doctor? I said, thank you, God. The doctor was the messenger. So I'm still here because I'm supposed to be. You're still here because you're supposed to be. If you have a choice to go somewhere else, you'll do that. That's the most important and most powerful thing we have in our lives, a choice of what we lift to our face, of who we talk to, of what we say. There are times I still have to bite my tongue. Someone is giving me noise I don't want to hear. Someone is telling me what to do and how to do it. Someone is angering me. It's not a good state for me to be in. So I have to laugh at myself. Sometimes in someone's home, I'll go into the bathroom, look in the mirror until I can smile at myself. Then I start to laugh because this is me. This is what I'm doing. It's amazing. So you found a way to find yourselves to this room, and you're going to find other rooms during the day and a very gifted speaker this evening. And it's because we want something we didn't have before. And you can get it here. And it's free. If you want a diet, there are thousands. They're at every newsstand you go to. But this is free. And all it takes is a phone call to activate your program. I'd like to leave you with a proverb. I collect them from people who probably knew nothing about program in their lives. But they said things that work here. And this was said by a American philosopher by the name of George Santayana many years ago. He said, there is no cure for birth or death except to enjoy the interval. Thank you very much.
Right. Well, I only got one of the Ask It Baskets back, but we've got lots and lots of questions. I'm afraid we're not going to be able to answer them all. But there's one question that I will address to everybody on the panel, and any of you who choose to answer can do so. And I'll leave it up here for you, too. It says, if you could go back to the first day you attended a meeting and tell yourself then that you would be in program this long, what do you think the you then would have said? And knowing what you know now, what would you tell yourself in response? Who would like to answer that one? I can go to the next one. Nobody? Okay, we'll go on to the next one. Okay, come on up. It's right there.
I would have said, no way. I mean, because when I came here, you know, I just thought, I'm going to get, if this abstinence thing works, I'm going to abstain, lose my weight, and then I'm out of here because I don't want to be in these rooms for the rest of my life. But however, today what I would say is, what a blessing. What a blessing. This is an awesome experience, and I'm so glad that I stayed. Thank you.
Thanks, Cheryl. Oh, thank you. Okay, this is addressed to anybody who cares to answer. When I think of one day at a time, I can only think of those times I'll fail. How can I handle that?
Failing is an old thought. I have to think about what's going to help me move forward. And there are times when I'll go into a private place, and again, I use the bathroom, put down the lid, sit down and stare at the second hand on my watch. Helps me meditate. It takes a very long time for a second hand to go around and make a minute. The first thought I'm not responsible for. I'm only responsible for the action I take. My first thought is still sometimes not a healthy thought. I can't help that. Again, that's my condition, not my fault. So if you have a thought that goes through your head and you don't want to act it out, if you don't remember, you won't have to make an amend about it. And that's what I think of also. I made amends with white knuckles. I worked the 12 steps with white knuckles. And the less I screw up, the fewer amends I have to make. So living in the moment helps do that. And taking a message from my head saying, I can do something else, didn't work and doesn't work. So I have to sit still and think about what I'm going to do.
Just a few quick notes. Somebody asked, why am I wearing a face mask? I have pneumonia and I'm getting ready to go home. This is to protect all of you. That's why I'm wearing the mask. Also, a couple of people have asked, well, one at least, I'm not going to have this addressed now. Some of you have asked on a daily basis how these people use the tools and the steps. The next panel is called Working the Program on a Daily Basis. It starts at 10:15, and the speakers are going to specifically talk about what they do and how they do it. This question I'll ask anybody who would like to address it. This repeated a few times. What is the difference between a slip and a relapse?
I just think it's important not to get caught up in semantics and to really just talk out the difficulty you're having with someone in the program, preferably your sponsor. I don't know, you know, during the 10 years that I was struggling, I didn't even necessarily define that as a relapse until I got out of it. But I don't think that kept me in it. What I called it didn't matter. What was important was to use the people in the program, use the tools in the program, and especially use my sponsor to work my way out of the difficulty, because one can lead to the other. I personally believe it's important not to be so hard on ourselves that we can never live up to our expectations. I think that's a formula for failure, personally. So try to find a kind of sponsor who can help you move forward rather than just get caught up in the semantics of the word.
Well, I sure wish we had more time because there are some tremendous questions here. I'm very sorry that we weren't able to get to all of your questions, but we're all here after the meeting is over. Let's see. If you wish to. Oh, I'm sorry. Would you please help me thank the speakers for sharing their experience, strength, and hope? And I thank you all for handling the endless emails to confirm all of this. All right. For those of you who wish to, would you please stand where you are and join hands and join me in the third step prayer. Hands or arms or hands, whatever you like. I know, it's hard to get everybody connected in this big of a room. Is everybody touching somebody? Great. God, I offer myself to Thee to build with me and to do with me as thou wilt. Relieve me of the bondage of self, that I may better do thy will. Take away my difficulties, that victory over them may bear witness to those I would help of thy power, thy love, and thy way of life. May I do thy will always. Amen. Keep coming back. It works if you work it. Yee-hoo! Microphone.